cliffcentral.com. All right. I really didn't realize this was going to be that kind of Sia song. Because, you know, she's got very cool songs and then she's got depressing ones. But this is called Salted Wound. I thought it was worth a play, but forgot that it was shit.
Yeah, our title gave a bit away. Salted
yeah.
Wound.
Salted Wound. It's kind of, yeah, it's kind of depressing. Black Box has sent a nice picture of Sia and Katlego, my boy. That's what he calls himself. The guy from Espresso, I think it is. And the two of them getting married. According to Black Box, that song should be played at their wedding. How do you like that? All right.
There are no words for that.
And Roman says, I'm trying to hit a squat personal best at the gym and you're playing this esoteric hippie bullshit music. Yeah, all right. Brian says, thank you for your valuable information, Flax. Today is actually set aside for the president's reply in Parliament. That is what today is.
I've heard better music in an elevator.
All right. You know what? I did say the other day we'll take your advice on what you think we should be playing. So you send me some suggestions. All right.
Where's the M&M? Where's the 50 Cent?
You want rap? Mm.
Yes, I'll bring you rap. It's Dr. Dre's birthday today.
It is?
It is. He turned 51.
Okay.
All right, producer. We'll prep that in next time.
Yeah. You let us know. In the middle of the show, you're telling me it's Dr. Dre's birthday. What, must I suddenly pull Dr. Dre's music from out of my backside?
He's an iconic person.
Yes, I know that. That's not in dispute.
He's like Paul McCartney.
You don't have to dispute that. That's not what we're talking about. Focus on the issue. The issue, if you told me ahead of time, we could have got some Dr. Dre music in here.
I can pull some Dr. Dre for the next one.
Why are you telling me then? Do it. Please. What are we talking about here? It's ridiculous. All right, Justice is running a couple of minutes late, but he'll be here in a second. In the meantime, let me tell you about this quickly, because it's very important that you know. They're producing a TV show teaching rescue dogs how to fly planes.
That's amazing.
I don't even know how this is possible. I mean, I've seen dogs doing extraordinary things, but flying a plane? The show's called Dogs Might Fly. According to Mashable, the animals will be put through a series of tests examining their skills in communication, empathy, memory, and reasoning. And the best of them will go to flying school. 12 dogs will be involved in the show, and they'll be selected from various rescue homes across the country. Now, here's my question. Even if you loved the dog that was put in charge of flying you, would you take a flight with a dog in charge of the plane?
Absolutely not.
I don't care what this dog might be a genius. This dog might be able to solve mathematical problems that I haven't even fathomed. But I'm sorry, I'm not going to let a dog fly me around. Right? Piloting a plane we need a human. That's the one thing I'd kind of like a human to be involved in. Even if it's just supervising. But for a dog to fly a plane, no. Outrageous.
It would be the easiest thing to crash a plane being flown by a dog, though, because all you need really is a ball and throw it and then say fetch. And then it's tickets.
Yeah, or you open the back of the chips.
Then it's over. It'd be the easiest thing in the world.
The dog would stop concentrating on the flight immediately and it would turn to you and the packet of chips or the ball. And it would be over. Unbelievable.
Or, you know, a cat would just fuck with him. doggy.
Yeah. A stupid cat wouldn't realize that having been on the plane with the dog, the cat would die as well.
I think a cat would sooner know how to fly a plane, but then would deliberately crash it because it's cats.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, there's the runway. Right. Actually, let's take a little detour. What could happen?
Apparently, Zuma has said, and this is quite something, that I want to talk to Justice about this too. The president has said he was absolutely right about appointing Van Rooyen, and I'm not going anywhere. How's that for a guy who thinks he's got all the answers? Huh? This is an article this morning. Jacob Zuma has vowed urgent concrete action to prevent South Africa's debt from being downgraded to junk as pressures mount in the country's $350 billion economy. In an indication of the difficulty facing the emerging market, the South African president told the Financial Times the government needed to change its tack on issues like cooperating with business and curbing spending. It is clear that we need to do these things differently. But Mr. Zuma displayed his characteristic defiance by defending his leadership, adding that his ruling African National Congress remained united, absolutely united, behind him, despite speculation that he is at his most vulnerable since taking office in 2009. Well, luckily for you, we can find out what all of this means, because right now, Justice Milano is here for the Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's. We do this every Thursday, and today's no exception. We're going to find out what to make of the State of the Nation, what to make of the State of the Nation debate that took place afterwards, and what the President's comments might be. Before we get into that, can I quickly go to Tabo? Let me just see what Tabo has to say here. He's on the line. And you can call us too, 0861-555-189. Hey, morning, Tabo.
Yeah.
What's up?
I was waiting to actually go through to the show.
Yeah?
Yeah, I wanted to comment about the song.
Yeah, you can. Go ahead. That's what you're on for.
Ah, that's strange. I can't hear myself. All right.
Well, what did you want to say, Tabo?
Well, I wanted to say it was a horrible song, actually. listen. By the way, Gareth Smith, you need to be nicer to Michael, man.
Nicer to him.
He's got a nice taste in music. He said I should say that. I don't know.
All right. Yeah, he told you to say that. Thanks, Tabo. All right. Thank you for all your advice.
No, hold on. Yeah. Gareth, wait. The song was horrible.
Yeah, you've said that already.
Oh, I don't.
Thank you, you douchebag. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Thank you. Fucking hell. Some people. All right, let's get into this. Justice Milan is here. It's time for the Burning Platform. It's brought to you every week by Nando's.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
Good morning, Justice. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you? What a way to start the day. I feel like Jacob Zuma when he said the ANC is absolutely behind him. Michael knows no one is absolutely behind him.
No, not one. So, look, can you believe these statements? He's now saying he was absolutely right to get rid of Nene and bring in Van Rooyen.
I mean, this is the interview he did with the Financial Times.
Right.
And I read that and I thought this can't be true. So I called the reporter who did the interview. I called Andrew
Justice,
England.
Justice actually calls the reporter. He's not prepared to believe this.
I needed to understand.
Yeah, please explain.
What was his demeanor when he said this? Did he believe it and so forth? So I called Andrew England and said, man, fantastic interview.
Yeah.
But the contradictions between what he says in that interview and what he said, for example, with the CEOs last week when we met them, there were 100 of them sitting there and saying, yo, we're going to do this and so forth.
Right.
So for me, the biggest issue here is, so you say one thing when you're with an audience that, no, we're fixing this, we're doing this, and, oh, it was absolutely fine to appoint Des Van Rooyen.
I mean, how much evidence do you need that you made the wrong decision?
You know, that whole week, you know, today, I don't know what I remember when it happened and we were all laughing at Michael Flax because he was going to Europe and the rand went from 14 something to the dollar to nearly 17 to the dollar. Against the euro, same kind of thing. And we were laughing at him because, quite frankly, the poor guy was going to live on water and Coca-Cola if he could afford the Coca-Cola. And so that is still the case. The rand still hasn't recovered from what happened that week. The bond market still hasn't recovered. On every level, every time you hear the ratings agencies, IMF, World Bank, all of them moaning about South Africa is not going to grow, everyone traces it right back to what is called December 9-12 now. And 9-12 was such a big, big thing that President Zuma doesn't see that he has to say, actually, maybe it was a misstep and I'm sorry and I've moved on. We've got a fantastic new finance
but
minister.
It doesn't even matter what he says anymore because actually the actions speak louder than the words and he had to change his mind on it and
he's
lost a huge amount of personal credibility and party political credibility within the ANC. So actually, whatever, dude, you know, say whatever you want.
But he's also like a cat with nine lives where he survived and come back many a sticky situation. He's not about to start admitting when he's done wrong now when he's never done that before.
No. Yeah, I like that. I think it's more than nine lives.
He's a survivor, this guy.
Can't you have that song? Isn't it Beyonce?
Yes.
I'm a survivor.
Destiny's Child.
Because, mm-hmm. I mean, quite frankly, I feel it's more than nine lives. You say nine lives. I think it's way more than that. Think about the savaging that he received from the opposition this week. I mean, Julius Malema was all over him. And then, you know, Planet Zuma and what it's like on Planet Zuma. It was quite something.
I think both of them made very good points, but I love Julius's summary. He said, your legacy will be Mshiniwam, Nkandla, and Zupta. And this guy, he's like Teflon. Nothing sticks.
Nothing. He sat there. And this afternoon, we're going to have the president responding. And it's going to be, oh, it's all okay. Mm-hmm. It's all fine. And he seems to be surviving this one. he seems to be just the big, powerful ship that just keeps on going. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Perhaps I was interested in particularly that line, that absolutely behind him, when he says the ANC is absolutely.
But they're not.
But I don't think so. If you look at the reports over the weekend, particularly from the Sunday Press, the MPs are up in arms. People who... I tell you, I don't know how Tulas Ngesi sits there after being used so shabbily. Nathi Mthethwa, who once said we mustn't take pictures of Nkandla.
Can we just
put one on the website just for that?
Sure.
Just because we can. All these people who did all these extraordinary things just totally, essentially said, you know, you people have been talking bollocks and that's it. So I was interested in the speeches from Phumulo Masualle, Lindiwe Sisulu, Naledi Pandor, all of them over the past 2 days.
Well, help those of us who didn't watch, because I've got to be honest, I'm totally not interested at the moment. I feel like I'm disconnected from the whole thing. I did watch a bit of the State of the Nation, but even there I peeled off.
Yeah, yeah.
After the EFF left, I kind of did as well. In fact, when Monsieur Lakota left, I left. So maybe all those years ago when I voted COPE, I was onto something. But after that, I haven't really paid attention. I believe yesterday was carnage. There was such insult and nastiness and vitriol traded.
Yeah.
Tell me what happened.
It descended into just anarchy, and it's sad actually to see that body reduced to what it is now. There's no control from the presiding officers. Straight from the State of the Nation speech itself, and you say you saw that first bit when Balekambete struggled to to essentially, you know, say what needed to be done.
Struggled. She looked like she was going to have a heart attack.
So between 7 p.m. and 8:01 on Thursday evening, you saw Balekambete kind of doing the old, I'm your parent, and so what, says the 16-year-old. I'm your parent. No, so what, says the 16-year-old. I'm going to go out with that boy, whatever you say. I'm your parent. And, you know, she didn't use the tools at her disposal to bring order to the house. She totally lost it. She was absolutely at sea. And that is why Naledi Pandor at some point stood up and said, I mean, I don't know what other rebuke you can have. It was the most insulting, the truest thing as well, when she said, you're busy having this dialogue with the EFF. You're not doing your job.
Yeah.
Which is to bring order and for us to continue here. But she still didn't do it. She still didn't know what to do. She was twice rescued by Musi Maimane, who said, we're here for the 8.3 million who don't have jobs, and you are essentially playing around. But at the end of the day, the National Assembly has become really a joke. The past three sessions have been... full of just full of insult and noise. And
you don't think that all of this is a new energy in politics, in parliamentary politics? Because, I mean, last year we had the EFF being thrown out. There was a lot more violence, and it was a lot more shocking for this, for the people of this country to see. This year, at least, we're seeing, while there's a complete lack of discipline and everybody's behaving badly, at least we're not seeing people being forcibly removed.
I think maybe
there's an energy that we can build on.
I think it's good that we don't have the violence. I think it's good that people are beginning to actually be imaginative in the way they use language. I think that's great. But I do think that for a country that has the kind of problems that we have, where, you know, we don't talk about this, but there are 8.3 million unemployed people in South Africa. 3.5 million of those people, if you ask them today, are you looking for a job? They'll say, no, I'm not getting out of my house to go look for a job because I know I won't get one. There is a tsunami at the heart of this country that we seem to be ignoring totally. And it's that in a country of 54 million, 8.3 million able-bodied people who can actually do a job of work are not working. These are people, essentially, we're saying, that don't have dignity. They live off their sisters, brothers, parents. They're dependent. We have 16 million people on social grants. It shouldn't be a matter of joy that we are like this. So I think it's absolutely necessary. If President Zuma is not doing his job, then the opposition must go for him and go for him hard on the issues. But one of the things I find, and which the reason why perhaps you and many, many other people, because I've had a lot of people saying, oh yeah, I peeled off after a while at that State of the Nation. And yesterday and the day before the debate, people just laugh at, oh, it's Planet Zuma, or, ooh, Cloud Cuckooland, or where does Musi Maimane live, and so forth and so forth. And quite frankly, I feel like we're going to be surprised. One of the big surprises last year was the Fees Must Fall movement. And it was because essentially mainstream politics had ignored the fact that there is something wrong in a system where at Fort Hare University, the university could just turn around and say, oh, you haven't paid your fees, and so you're not going to be allowed to write your final exams, which means that you've just wasted a year of your life. And so we get surprised when Sheikville comes along and people put up shacks on Jamie on Residence Road at UCT and say, you know, we are frustrated here. We didn't even know that there are kids living in hostels because there's no accommodation, and that's
including Brian Molefe's son. I mean, one of the eight people arrested because they were pulling paintings off of the wall and burning them.
Yeah, now I have to say that these movements, can I just say, these movements are not without their complications. I mean, I find some of the things and some of the justifications for the violence and so forth, it's absolute utter rubbish, quite frankly. You don't go there. One of the things that people pointed out was that, yeah, you're pulling out down all these paintings. One of them is a struggle painting, for example. So
I think the history has shown us that there is a particularly dark and wicked place for people who destroy art,
yeah,
and destroy human history. You know what, one of the things in my living memory that disturbs me the most is those Buddhas in Bamiyan,
yeah,
in Afghanistan, that were blown up by the Taliban. I decided on that day that the Taliban were my enemy. Not because I care particularly for Buddhism or for Islam, but because this is a piece of world heritage that was wantonly destroyed by a bunch of criminals.
Yeah.
And the same goes for anyone who burns a painting or a book. I have a very deep, despising, abiding hatred for people who destroy art and books.
I think that is something particularly, it goes against the grain. For many, many people, for many of us who didn't have books when we were kids, wanting books. I mean, I remember sitting just desperate to read some of those African writer series books, and that we had a school principal at the one school who did have this series and had locked them up.
Yeah.
You don't do things. There are so many things that happen in this movement that undermine that same movement that I think that that's a huge conversation to be had there.
Yeah.
But the point I was making was that these are the real issues that confront our nation now. The fact that there's a massive drought. Mm. No one said anything about the fact that when I looked at I was on a plane yesterday for 2 hours. I land in my email inbox, there are three notifications saying, oh, you know, because of the state of the rand, because of this, this will go up. The price of this will go up. The price of this. Yep. Now, you know, I'm Justice Malala sitting there and I can, you know, hustle and do this. How about ordinary Mrs. Mtembu, Mrs. Malala in Alexandra Township? When the price of millimil goes up, when the price of avocados, potatoes, basics like that go up. Everything, the price of everything is going up. You know, we're sitting here using all our gadgets. The price of a young person who needs a new laptop, it's not
going to happen.
13,000 rand anymore. It's going to be 18,000. Where's the parent going to get the money? These are real problems that we face, but I don't feel that we are grappling with them at all. So
we can't even, the guy at the top can't even admit he made a mistake last December.
And this is a problem.
If you just admit, I mean, if he said, okay, I screwed up, I'm sorry, I made a hasty decision for various reasons, all of which are very nefarious if you look into the situation. Mm. The Guptas, and I want to ask you about this. It seems that the Guptas, who we talk about regularly, the Guptas were behind the appointment of Van Rooyen and his two advisors, who seem to be Gupta men. One of them is Jesse Duarte's relative or something. What's the story there?
That's quite a story. And this story, it was first broken by Trevor Manuel, who wrote in the City Press on the Sunday after Nenegate, that on the Friday, Das van Rooyen arrives for his first day at Treasury, and he's with two people. One of them is a certain Mr. Bobert, and the other one is a certain Mr. Whitley. And Mr. Whitley is the son-in-law of the Deputy Secretary General of the ANC, Jesse Duarte.
Mm-hmm.
This story has been written again and again, and they haven't identified themselves, and they haven't come forward to say, guys, don't associate us with the Guptas.
Yeah, don't malign us like
don't
this.
Don't malign us like this. They don't say anything. Only on Friday, when an investigative journal called Africa Confidential, which is well known all over the world, published out of London, carries a story saying, Des van Rooyen arrived with these two people, and these people arrived and said, guys, nothing's going to change here at Treasury. You're going to do your jobs as you usually do. But signing powers are for the minister and us too. And it named them. Suddenly you had in yesterday's newspapers, Mr. Bobert saying, just because I'm Indian, I'm not connected to the Guptas. Mr. Whitley saying, I've known Mr. Das van Rooyen from the days when he was in the local government, South African Local Government Association in the Northwest.
Right.
It just, so from knowing a guy before 2009, suddenly you've become his special
friend.
Advisor at Treasury, not at local government even.
With no Treasury. Experience, really.
With no experience or anything like that. Absolutely nothing. Boom. So, I mean, the questions around this are huge. The Guptas themselves, it just gets worse. I mean, there's a story about them and the mines that they're getting, Tageta and so forth. That story continues to swell, and it's all about President Zuma and his son and the Guptas, who've made it basically, we are the business partners of the Gupta, of the Zumas, and therefore, we'll get work. I'm telling you, Julius Malema and his EFF are going to make hay out of the Zupta moniker, because, you know, it stinks to high heaven, that relationship, and it don't stop stinking.
I asked this question yesterday, and maybe you can help answer it. When did this relationship start with the president and the Guptas? How far back can we trace it?
The Guptas arrived in 1993 in South Africa. Ajay and Atul Gupta arrived here, and with the help, by the way, of and had a long relationship with Esop Pahad, and President Mbeki was sort of around there. But it wasn't a close government relationship, as it were. It's only as President Zuma rose to power in 2008, 2009, and people started being attracted to him, that the Guptas really came into their own as kind of being close to him. From that period onwards, that's when some of President Zuma's, at least one of his children, got a house in the compound in Sachsenwald. That's when one of President Zuma's wives started working for one of the Sahara group of companies, which belongs to the Guptas. That's when a house in Pretoria was purchased and is being paid for by one of those companies where one of President Zuma's wives lived. There is, and from then on, essentially, there was a formalization of the relationship between Ajay, Atul, and Tony Gupta, whereby Duduzane Zuma became a partner.
Yep.
In
coal businesses. And so there was technology and media.
Exactly. And so suddenly the relationship became solidified, and they were doing deals and so forth. There's always been questions raised about this. There's always been questions, and can I talk about Julius Malema again?
Please, because he was involved too.
Julius Malema it was in 2010, I think, or 2011.
Oh yeah.
When he, in fact, it goes back to 2010 when Figile Mbalula was the minister of the deputy minister of police, he got a call from one of the Guptas saying, "My brother, congratulations! You've done it. You're going to be minister of sport and recreation." Now, at this point, no one knew that they were going to be this, but the Guptas already knew. Now, you might say, Justice Malala is lying again. But on Tuesday, when the debate happened in the House and Julius said all these things that he'd said, it was interesting to see that Figile Mbalula tweeted that all the stuff that Julius is dishing, it's all well known, it's all open, we've all known about it for years. So he's saying, we've all known for years that, you know,
that I'm rotten, that the Guptas tell us what to do.
So basically, if I tell you that I'm going to be a minister, you better ask me how I know. Because if I got it from the Guptas, it's
then it's true.
But if I got it from someone else, no.
It seems almost like we're at a stage with some of these ministers and with the president where you can be caught with your hand in the till. You can be shown to be corrupt and incorrupt relationships, and it just doesn't matter to you. You don't care, and you also don't care about being owned by businessmen. In this case, nefarious businessmen like the Guptas. It doesn't seem to bother people who come from a movement which stands for liberty and for freedom and for democracy and for the right for people who were considered second-class citizens to now be able to determine their own path and their own destiny. Yeah. To be owned, to be handled, to be manipulated by these interests is so demeaning.
It's absolutely demeaning. I don't know how people go home and
for money, and for money.
And
to the president of a country.
Exactly. So it's extraordinary. It seems as if nothing's going to happen. There was a story in the in the Sowetan yesterday, saying that the ANC drilled the Guptas. Well, I mean, why don't you turn around to your own person sitting right next to you and say, President Zuma, this thing needs to come to an end now.
Yeah.
Instead of going to them,
because
what is going on? Oh, I don't get it. I just don't get it.
It would be very easy for the president if he really wanted to set things right now and win a lot of support back and hopefully position the ANC for a good election this year. If he had to say, look, I've heard you. First of all, I apologize for what happened on the 9th of December. Second of all, this thing with the Guptas will go away because I'm cutting all ties with them. I'm going to tell my family to cut ties with them as well. And we're all going to do things that we can focus our energies on that are positive. I mean, even if he didn't mean it, if he said it, it would be a major concession.
It would be a major concession, but he won't do it because he is so deeply, deeply beholden to them at so many levels that we don't know. Remember, we're talking about the stuff that has been written about.
I mean, imagine how powerful you have to be able to appoint cabinet ministers and to be able to dismiss the finance minister.
On the day, you know, we talk about Des van Rooyen, but guys, we need to talk about Museveni Zizwani, the minister who is now in... That minister, the day before his appointment, there are reports in the city press that the president was at the Gupta family house. The fact that that man is the person who wrote a letter for the Guptas to land their plane at Waterloo Air Force Base. The fact that one of the first things he does in his new job as minerals minister is to fly to Switzerland to negotiate with the Guptas to negotiate for them. I mean, it's extraordinary. So anyway,
That's one family has taken over our country,
and nothing is being done about it. It's quite a thing. It's quite a thing.
Do you think the EFF have the potential to unsettle this whole Gupta thing to the point where they will be forced to account for themselves, or do you think that they're so powerful and they're so well placed that the president will even deploy state assets in defense of them?
I think the president is already deploying state assets in defense of them. He uses his ministers to appear on their breakfasts where they bang on about basically public relations. I think government clout is being used. He's no longer even deploying. They're deploying people into positions so that they can do. They have their employees essentially in there. You know, one of the things on this week was that Ace Magashule was on one of the New Age breakfasts going on and on.
He was talking about how we must defend the president. People don't have respect for him.
Exactly. Now, if you stop and say, what's going on here? Mr. Magashule's son works for the Guptas, just like Mr. Zuma's son. He lived in the compound. So it's you sit there and you say, how deep really is this relationship? How far does it go? And then you start saying, wow, you know, this is a presidency that belongs elsewhere and we're being run from somewhere else.
I have to say that in an age of identity politics and where we see things like this Rose Must Fall movement and we see young people standing up for Fees Must Fall, and we hear about the complaints in civil society against government. People are standing up for themselves. The one person who must have such low self-esteem that he can't stand up for himself is the man at the top, because he's allowing himself to be used, essentially to be a slave to a new master. How did this happen? And how did he then co-opt the rest of us as South Africans into being slaves of this one powerful Indian business family? How did this happen?
I think
infuriating. We're not free.
easy now. We're not free to say something.
We're free to say it now, and we're free to say it here. But yeah. I guarantee you couldn't say this on an SABC radio station or television.
No, absolutely not. You'd be chucked.
You couldn't
off.
Say this at the New Age.
Absolutely not.
ANN7, even ENCA, some would debate, but you don't have to comment on that one.
I could comment on that one. You can say, but one of the things I think your question is key when you say, can the EFF do this? I think the EFF has gone quite some way to putting it at the center and the heart of our politics.
Then we must support them.
I think they must be supported hugely. And I think we owe a lot to Julius Malema for that. In 2012, he gave a speech, I think it was in Rustenburg, in which he said at the rally that South Africa doesn't belong to one family. And that's where he said, you know, what's going on when people receive calls from the Guptas instead of from the president telling them that they are now ministers? And I think that that opened it up. The Mail and Guardian had done an incredible job of saying what's going on here. And he opened it up, and he's kept on opening it up. I think their campaign lately has, I don't agree with the threats against journalists, even if they're from AN7 or the New Age. I absolutely think that we don't want to go there. But I think they've put the Gupta family and properly. Remember that we vote for President Zuma and the ANC. And the ANC and President Zuma need to be put under pressure to right. explain this. So I think the pressure is there, and I think it's useful. And I think that the Guptas are finding themselves having to explain. For the first time, they've been sending out their minions like Nazim Hawa and Muhsin Williams to sort of, oh, tell us, you know, this is horrible and we are not like that and so forth. It will be interesting to see if Atul Gupta, Ajay Gupta, are prepared to come on this show mm-hmm. and have a discussion with you about who they are, how they work, what they are doing, and all the things that they've been accused of. Because they have always sent out these minions to defend them. Where are they? In the mix, and they should, if they are innocent, if they are, if they haven't done all these things, then they should come here on Cliff Central and talk.
Did you see any of the parliamentary attendance records that were published over the last couple of days? Just in terms of who's been in Parliament the most and who's been in Parliament the least, it was interesting.
Oh.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting. Apparently, the UDM don't have a great record.
But he does make a very dignified speech, Mr. Holomisa.
That he does. I've always liked him in Parliament. I think he's sensible.
Can I finish off on something that I've wanted to? I thought it was a nice bit of morsel. You know, Julius Malema said in Parliament on Tuesday that he got a call from Figile Mbalula. These two are the thickest thieves, I tell you.
Didn't they used to be BFFs?
They were such
BFFs. They had a serious bromance. Yes.
They were bromance. So he says, I got a call from Figile Mbalula. Remember that Figile Mbalula, the allegations that he was kidnapped, some say no, he went himself. But he went up for his initiation.
Yes, I remember, in the mountains.
In the mountain, at the ripe old age of, I can't remember, 38, 39. Anyway, so Julius says, this is new, that you allowed a cell phone in the mountain. But he says, I got a call from the mountain. So this is 2008 from Figile Mbalula saying, Chief, don't support this move to get rid of Thabo Mbeki by Jacob Zuma. And he said, you know, I should have listened to Mbax then. And then he says, Mbax said, don't support these moves. Don't go for it, man. And remember, Figile Mbalula had been behind the push to get Thabo Mbeki removed. And,
yeah, I remember.
So he'd been a big part of that. He was president of the Youth League at the time. He was all over this thing. So Julius says, but he doesn't do it. Julius is now the president of the ANC Youth League.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a meeting with Jacob Zuma, in which Jacob Zuma says, I can't work with this chief, meaning Thabo Mbeki. I just can't work with him. We gotta move against him. So this is in the run-up to September
right.
2008. I love this because myself, every single political writer in South Africa has written the story that Jacob Zuma did not want Thabo Mbeki to be removed in September 2008.
Right.
All of us. I can't think, and I try to read as many people as possible. I can't think of a single South African political or foreign political writer who's written that. Apparently, every one of us has been writing that. No, Jacob Zuma said, no, chiefs, we can't do this. We mustn't do this. It will be bad for us. And people said, no, go for it, go for it. Yeah. And they voted 60-40. Let's remove the guy. And Gwede Mantashe in the middle of the night, went to Masamba Ndlovu and said, my brother, time to go. This revelation by Julius Malema in Parliament on Tuesday basically says Jacob Zuma told me, Julius Malema, to go into that ANC-NEC meeting and say, we can't work with this chief. It's time for him to go. So Jacob Zuma, after all these years of saying, no, I didn't want to do it, but the comrades,
turns out it was him.
He had a meeting with Julius Malema saying, yes, go for it. I mean, oh, the history writers will love this one. I wonder if President Mbeki shouldn't write his next letter.
About this.
I mean, he should Facebook the heck out of this thing.
I hope he does.
This is new information. It's juicy information. It's fresh. It's beautiful. I love it.
Well, there's lots more we can talk about. And I think the president's feedback today will be, as you predict, that he will say everything's cool.
It's all good. It's all good. We are on top of the economy. We are on top of everything. It's all fine. I think that Financial Times interview that he did, it's the usual. I was interested in the fact that he said that Zuma will keep on going. Nothing's going to change. And you have to say, wow, you are very, very confident. But if you look at all those statements by Planet Pando, Lindiwe Sisulu, all of them, all the ANC guys, none of them defended Nkandla. None of them defended the president. They all said, we've done very well over the past 20 years. Basically saying, we did incredibly well under Thabo Mbeki and Nelson Mandela. So let's take on some of those things and extend them over the other 6 years.
Yeah.
But none of them, after what happened to all those guys who were thrown under the bus, no one is going to stand up and defend this individual. They will defend the ANC, and you will see that coming through in this in the speeches that are being made. President Zuma might say that he will keep on going, but he's definitely under a lot of pressure.
Justice, thank you. That's a very poignant moment to end the whole thing on, but always good to catch up with you, and thank you for coming in this morning for the Burning Platform.
Absolute pleasure.
It is brought to you by Nando's every Thursday on cliffcentral.com with Justice Malala. You can also read his columns regularly in the newspapers, and you can watch his show on ENCA. And most importantly, his book, As Relevant As Ever, is still on the shelves. And how's it doing? Very well?
Oh, absolutely nicely. Thank you to the Cliff Central listeners. I tell you, I've been amazed. We have such amazing, lively and reading people on this station. It's fantastic.
We have now begun our descent is the book's name. You can buy it at all good bookstores. It's in the front row at Exclusive Books. Top shelf. What's that, Ben?
I saw it in my bed every night.
Oh, wow.
Ben, we need to
gotta fight.
Look who you're sharing a bed
for
with.
Fight for attention here.
All right, very good. Thank you, Justice Malala.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.